Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips with Paul Harrah's and the poker coach, Joe McGowan. Brought to you by Poker Stars, Reactor Watches, and the Poker Players Alliance.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
You got no.
Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Jackpot. Thank you, sir. May I have another?
Coming up on the show today, a recap of the EPT finale in Monte Carlo. We'll also introduce you to a poker millionaire slash college student. Well, he's graduating in a couple of days.
Soon to be graduate, yeah.
Soon to have his college degree, but turned into a poker millionaire first. Good thing he made the money before he got the degree, because now who knows what will happen with his life. His name is Shannon Shore. News about a new TV poker event that is in production today, plus lots of other poker news and some TV hands and a couple of sick live hands that we've got to talk about. Hi, I am Paul Harrah's alongside Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips, who is just back from the EPT finale in Monte Carlo, one of your favorite places to go every year.
It's pretty much awesome over there, I'll have to admit. Second time there, it's breathtaking, the view there. The cars that wander up and down the streets, you walk in front of the hotel and you see Lamborghinis and Bentleys and Rolls Royces and cars I can't identify.
Mm-hmm.
This year I tested a couple of different restaurants over there, and I saw something I'd never seen before. They have the Grand Prix there, of course, which comes up in just about a week or so.
Yep.
But they have something different I didn't even know existed, the Grand Prix Classic, where they take the cars that ran in this race 10, 20, 30, even 50 years ago,
mm-hmm.
invite them back, and have races according to, you know, like different decades of it.
So there are some cars there from the 50s?
From the 50s, from the 70s, from the 90s, whatever on it.
Wow.
And I got a great seat right on the grandstand there, right near the finish line, got to watch it, got to see a nice accident, you know, the usual things with it. But it was amazing. The ones from the 50s. Now, these are some classic cars that you can't replace. They had one that finished third in the 1952 Grand
That's
Prix.
That's going to be hard to find parts for that car.
Well, they didn't exactly race all out. Let's put it this way. Okay.
Well, you know, it's funny. When you said accident, I thought to myself, gee, I don't know if I'm going to race a classic vehicle full bore. Because, you know, I don't want to hit the wall or hit somebody else or anything.
Yeah, they were kind of taking it easy on that. A couple of them were still, you know, pushing it a little bit, but it was more or less just the scenic and watching them and everything that way. But some of the cars, like from the 80s and that, these guys were out for blood.
Yeah.
They were going. They were nailing it all the way around. Now, we saw a couple of, like I said, close calls, a couple of accidents. These guys were really heating it up.
Now, is this on a track like Gateway here
in St. Louis?
Oh, gosh,
no.
Where do they race?
This is why this is one of the toughest tracks in the world. They run through the streets of Monaco, the streets of Monte Carlo.
Mm-hmm.
This is up and down, hairpin turns, the same place you and I would drive if we live over there.
Mm-hmm.
They barricade the streets, put, you know, all the way around there so you can't get anywhere near it, granted. But this is just streets. There's nothing special about it at all.
Mm-hmm.
There's curbs. There's the whole bit. And if
pedestrians on the sidewalk?
No. They barricade it to where you can't have that, obviously. Uh-huh. But I'm telling you, I looked at this course and, you know, wow. There is literally a hairpin turn right in the middle of it while you're going downhill. And it's a full 360 turn on that thing.
Full 180, you mean.
Or 180, I'm sorry, 180.
Yeah.
So it's awesome. Unbelievable. I had a kick out of it, watched that. A lot of the other things, the cruise ships that came in and out of there. It's just an awesome place.
Well, unfortunately, you were able to do that because you had some free time.
I had lots of free time.
Yeah, you played in three events and
correct.
Didn't have deep runs in any of them, right?
I made day two in the one, and that, I'll have to tell you about that hand. That one's still main event. Basically got cold decked. We talked about this last week, the three hands that Chris had against me.
Yes.
When you flop a set and he flops a straight, when you have kings and he has aces, I mean, you know, that type of stuff. When you have kings, he has ace-queen, flops an ace-queen, you know, that type of stuff.
This is Chris Bjorn, the European
pro.
Who told you after the third one, I'll take you out to dinner to make up for it?
Did
he?
No, it wasn't quite that way. It was even funnier than that. There's a small village up in the mountains just 15 minutes from the seashore there. It's E-Z-E, Ace, I think they pronounce it. And it's 700 to 800 meters up, right on a cliff overlooking the Mediterranean. absolutely one of the most stunning views you'll ever see.
Wow.
And there's a restaurant up there at the top of it, and a little village that looks like it's from the 1400s or something.
Mm-hmm.
Went up there afterwards, had no knowledge anybody else was going to be there, just basically popped in, talked to a cab driver. Oh, you got to go here if you've never been there. He takes us up, drops us off at the front. We walk in. We walk through the front of it. There's supposed to be this village and everything like that. I have a goat path ahead of me. We're looking around going, okay, I guess we walk up the goat path. So we start walking up it, and literally it's gorgeous. There's terraces going down. There's statues here and there, water fountains, the whole bit. Not a single person, nothing.
Wow.
On it. Finally, we get, 100 yards up, and ahead of us, that's where I run into Chris.
Uh-huh.
He was up there with Eric Seidel. They were going to go to the restaurant. He looked back at me and waved, and I think he was kind of hesitant, like, is this guy following me to shoot me or something? What's going on here? But struck up a nice conversation. He invited to join him. We sat down, had an unbelievable meal there.
Mm-hmm.
This is, in Europe, the highest rating we have is a 3-star restaurant,
mm-hmm.
of which there is very, very few of them. And Chris is from Sweden. He's been traveling around to these circuit events and different things for 40 years. He said it was his favorite restaurant ever.
Oh, must have been spectacular.
It's unbelievable. We had a 7-course meal that was to die for, the whole bit like that. And, yes, he picked up the tab. And, yes, I let him. So, really nice guy. But I'll see him out in the World Series. I'll probably take him out to a meal out there. And, again, it's nothing he did wrong. It was the cards.
Right.
So I can't complain at all about it. He just he had the better hands. It was, when it happens, it happens. You have to smile.
That was in the main event of the big finale.
Right.
What about in the other two? You played in the 5K event and the 25K high roller. Anything there?
The 5K, again, I made it today too. Made it fairly close to the money. Lost the race, so I was down short stacked. I had a little over 20K in front of me when average was probably 50, 55.
Mm-hmm.
The gentleman in the small blind made a small raise. At this time, I believe it was like 6 and 12. He made it 2,700. I looked down at pocket eights.
You're in the big blind?
I am the big blind. No hesitation. Put the chips in.
Pocket eights, you're going to?
Pocket eights.
Any pair.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
He hesitates and thinks about it. He only started out the hand with about 32. So this is going to take over 2/3 of his chips.
Yep.
And finally he says, I call. And I went, I put him on like a queen jack or something that way, where if I have an ace, he's dominated. That's why he's hesitating.
Maybe
this
king
and that.
10.
Who knows?
Something
like that.
Yeah.
And he's short stacked too, so I figured we're racing probably. I said, I guess we're racing probably. And I turned the eights over, and he wilted. And I said instantly, yes, he has sevens. No, he had deuces.
Wow.
Now, at that stage, he's calling for basically his tournament life. When I could have an 8-3 and have him in a race.
That's right.
I just...
The best he can hope for there is 50-50.
Absolute best.
Yeah.
And, a 9-10 of hearts is actually a favorite in that hand.
Mm-hmm.
So many other things are.
Yeah.
Any pair I have him dominated.
3-4.
3-4. Yeah.
You're 50-50.
Yeah. It's just... I couldn't believe he made the call. I'm actually in the back of my mind going, thank you, thank you, thank you. Now I'm going to have close to 50,000 with the other Andes and that.
I'm guessing that thank you ended as soon as a deuce came on the board?
Actually, the next words out of my mouth were, goodbye.
Yeah.
It was actually a deuce on the flop. It came, there you go, end of tournament.
Right.
A little bit. But I was short stacked anyhow.
Mm-hmm.
I do think if I'd have won that hand, there's a very good chance I could have at least cashed because we were fairly close to the cash on it. And then the high roller was kind of interesting. They were expecting 40 to 50 people in the high roller,
mm-hmm.
had set up all the structure and everything accordingly. We were
now,
starting.
Was this like the high roller shootout that had happened at the NAPT in Mohegan Sun and the Venetian?
No, it was not. There was no bounty or anything like that. This was just a straight tournament and away you go on it.
25,000 euro buy-in.
Correct.
Which is about 40K US.
About 34,000.
Okay.
Yeah, on it. 25.5 on it transmits to about, because the euro went down a little in value, about 34,000 on it.
Okay.
So, yeah, substantial investment.
Yep.
And some pretty good players if you look around the room. They were expecting 40 or 50 players, and away you go. It got to 113.
What?
This was the largest high roller ever on it.
Is that because of online qualifiers who got in?
No, because there weren't any online qualifiers for this, I don't think. There were some satellites there and some super satellites that did it. It just, for whatever reason, people thought it was going to be, and I don't understand, a soft field.
Mm-hmm.
There would be online people. There were several celebrities that were in there on it. Boris Becker was playing and Jennifer Tilly was playing. And, you know, there's a number of people you'd recognize around there besides all the pros.
Yeah.
For whatever, Gus Hansen came up at the end of about a level and a half in his tennis clothes, looked around there. I talked to him for a minute, talked to Gulliver, and says, nah, I'm going to play. He went and signed up, and he sat there and played in his tennis clothes. Yeah. So, yeah. But the problem with it was, and no fault to anybody, but nobody was ready for this. The structure was set up, and it was set up for a final table payout. So we had 113 players to pay eight places.
What?
That's it.
Normally, tournaments are 10%. Some of them might go a little up to bigger 15%. Than that, 12 to 15%.
Yeah.
I know Stars is doing that on Scoop with some of the events that they're doing right. online now, but only eight out of 113.
I fully expected them to pay the final two tables. They were eight-man tables. 16 people is what they're doing. That's what I expected out of it.
Okay.
They announced the eight, and I started arguing with them. In fact, well, I think Daniel also started arguing. It's like, what are you talking about? How can you only be paying eight?
That's very steep.
Yeah. Now then, granted, eighth place was 81,000 euros. Mm-hmm. So making the final table was going to be extremely nice.
Yeah.
It was €1 million first place.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it was pretty awesome if you actually made it. The yeah. problem was, with only eight places, you had to change your game somewhat. You had to get some chips. You had to get a little more aggressive on it.
At what point, explain this for some of our okay. listeners who haven't played in things where it is a steep payout. And, you know, when I played the event in Biloxi in January, the WPT event, there were something like 330 or 340 people mm-hmm. in there, and they only paid 27 or 28 places,
See,
which again is less than 10%. It was something like 8%
yeah.
of the field. So what do you mean when you say you have to change the way you play? And at what point are you changing the way you play?
Well, again, it's up to your personal thing and what the table is. There is no steadfast rule on it. But you have to go deeper to make the pay. Therefore, you need to accumulate more chips. You need to be a little more aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
That's the general idea or philosophy behind it, mm-hmm. is you want to get the chips. You want to get a little more aggressive. You want to go after these players and play it. And, you know, I tried that. I went out 43rd, so I outlasted two-thirds of the field. You know, it's just the way it is mm-hmm. on the thing. I lost a race. I flopped a flush draw and turned an open-ended straight with it and didn't hit it on the river. Cost me another chunk of mine. I got up to about 170,000 when the average was around 110. I was in great shape. I lost those two hands. Then I was in trouble mm-hmm. on it. And I made I talked to Chris and a couple of other people who agreed with my play, but I don't know. I wouldn't mind hearing it from the viewers if they wanted to write in about their opinion of it and see whether they would have played it the same way I did.
Yep.
I was the big blind. Gentleman under the gun raised it about 2.5 times the Andes. At this time, I'm trying to guess, there were probably 8 and 1,600 for it. I still had 100K. I had plenty of chips in front of me on this deal. Gentleman that had raised it was a fairly tight player. Twice earlier, he had raised, pre-flop, had a re-raise and folded it, so I knew he could had fold equity. He was playing the hands that way. He had just a little more than me. He had maybe 110. I had 102. The hand previous this, the hand right before this, gentleman that was now in the small blind was in the big blind, played a monster hand, lost two-thirds of his chips,
mm-hmm.
running basically a bluff on that. And he had made the statement that this was the last hand of the night. He wasn't coming back with a short stack.
Okay.
So all this is, I'm setting this up obviously for a reason.
Nice tell, by the way, when you say those things out loud.
Yeah. I mean, it does kind of help, you know, a little bit. Anyhow, the gentleman under the gun raised it to about 4,600 from it, folded all the way around to the gentleman in the small blind who'd made that statement. He shoved his 50,000. I looked down at pocket nines.
Mm-hmm.
You got three options there, obviously. You fold, you call, you shove
yeah.
on that. If I shove there, in my opinion, the gentleman that was under the gun has to have aces or kings or something like that to call me, a premium hand. He's not going to want to go out on the last hand of the night.
Mm-hmm.
The way he played, I think he even lays down an ace-king there
okay.
on it. The guy that shoved with the 50K could have anything, literally. I think he decided to shove before the cards were dealt.
Mm.
No,
so he could have any two cards.
Literally anything. I'm not worried about him. If I was the last act, I'd call him in a heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
No problem with it. Thought about it for a minute. Thought about the smooth call. Wasn't for sure which way to do it or to shove, which one would be best on that. And again, I'd love somebody's opinion on it. To me, there a shove may not even be as strong as a smooth call on it because that's over 50% of my chips. It shows that I'm committed to it. I'm probably not laying down anything no matter what.
Yep.
And I'm trying to entice the guy to call me. It screams to somebody that you've got aces or kings.
screams to some people that you've got aces or kings. It might scream to other people who've got ace king. You know what? I'm going to come in here and maybe you know I think the first guy's got nothing, and I don't think Dennis has a monster hand here. Mm-hmm. So maybe at that point they're going to come over the top.
Well, but truthfully, the 50K that the gentleman shoved, the 50K that I put in there, I only have 50 back. If the other guy shoves, I'm going to have at a minimum 3-1 mm-hmm. on the chips in there and everything. It'd be pretty hard for me to lay down almost any hand at that time.
Well, because of that, I would not call. Because you're essentially saying, look, I'm putting all my chips in on this hand.
Yeah.
So why don't you put all your chips in on this hand?
Okay. I called.
Okay.
I did not shove.
Okay.
So it's a little over 50% of my chips in the pot, about 54,000 out of the 102 I started with.
Yep.
Put it in there. The guy tanks. It's literally going on so long, somebody's ready to call the floor on
him. The under-the-gun player.
The under-the-gun guy.
He's
just sitting there. He's sweating. He's this and that. He's positive I have aces, because otherwise I would have shoved.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely positive of it. And finally he says, I just can't lay him down. And so he pushed all in. I went ahead and called, praying, crossing my fingers that he has ace-king. Of course, he had kings.
Mm.
He said he would lay down queens. At that stage.
How about that? Smooth calling pre-flop under the gun at that point in the tournament with a pair of kings. You're essentially hoping that this scenario will come up. And then to have to think about it when it comes back around.
No, he raised pre-flop, remember? For the 16, he made it the 46.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
No, he did raise it.
Okay,
he played
I apologize.
It normal on that.
Okay.
But, he said if I'd have shoved, he would have put me on almost any pair or something like that. He could have called instantly. When I just smooth called, he was just positive I had aces.
Well, either way, we end up with the same result.
Make any difference.
The money goes in the middle.
It does.
I'm guessing you didn't catch a nine.
No, did not catch a nine.
And that was it. By the way, what did the guy in the small blind have?
Ace rag. He did have an ace, but it's like ace, I can't remember, three, something like that.
Mm.
Junk. So, yes.
That's where the under-the-gun guy with kings goes out and kills himself if the ace comes. The guy who's going to shove with any two cards. Yeah. Oh,
and again, now, in the World Series or something like that, I could have laid down the nines there. Because even though the guy had the 50,000 in chips and I would want them and such, might not have been worth the risk. Because, again, mm-hmm. he could have had 10 jack and were racing, that mm-hmm. type of stuff.
So this is what you were talking about when you were saying you have to be more aggressive at this
Correct.
Point because you've got to try to get as many chips as you can.
Yeah.
Because you can't just cash, make an easy 12 or 15% bubble. You want to go to that final 8%.
Correct.
Which is the final eight players.
Big difference. And, again, is also the last hand of the night. Most people don't want to go out the last hand. This guy still had 100K in front of him, even with his raise.
Yep.
I'm telling you, anything less than aces and kings, he would have laid down there.
All right, so there are Dennis's adventures at the EPT finale in Monte Carlo over the last week or so. We're at Harrah's St. Louis, our home casino. Happy to be here, and we thank you for listening to The Final Table, and thank you for listening to our podcast available on thechipleader.com. A reminder about our Final Table merchandise. We've got the hats, we've got the sweatshirts, we've got the Cuba Vera shirts. Dennis likes to wear those quite often with the Final Table logo right on there. We have the Final Table t-shirts as well. Some of our guests have started wearing them. You told me you ran into a guy in Europe wearing a Final Table hat.
Peter DeCordova, the guy that won the main event over there last year. I'm walking down the hall, and he's wearing a Final Table hat, the white one with the,
with the four aces
on the side there.
Yeah.
And I started laughing and pointed to him. He'd run into Kevin and wore the hat and loved it. Was asking me where he could order some more. I started talking to him the whole bit like that.
Yeah, that's great.
But it seems like wherever I go now, I'm starting to run into this stuff.
Well, if you want to get some of this stuff, the Final Table merchandise is available through the website, thechipleader.com. You just click on the button that says Shop, and it's right there. You can also get them in person if you're in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Later this week and for the 10 days following that, the Hard Rock Casino, formerly known as the Cherokee, the Hard Rock Casino down there is hosting their Mid-South Poker Classic, and our merchandising guy, Kevin Stefan, is going to be down there. Our thanks to their tournament manager, Brooks Turk, for allowing us to sell our stuff there.
Yes.
But you'll be able to pick up all of the Final Table merchandise and some one-time merchandise as well if you're at the Mid-South Poker Classic, the Hard Rock Casino in Tulsa. If not, go to our website and pick it up right there. The t-shirts are very nice. The sweatshirts are nice and soft inside and keep you warm in the cold poker rooms that we all play in. All of that available through our website, thechipleader.com. Coming up, college student poker millionaire Shannon Shore, plus details about new TV poker and some classic TV poker that aired this weekend. All that ahead as the Final Table continues on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.
Dennis Phillips has flown over 100,000 miles this year to play poker tournaments on three continents. But he always comes back to St. Louis to talk about the game. Here he is at the final table with Paul Harris from Harris St. Louis Casino and Hotel on 590 The Fan KFNS.
And this portion of the show is brought to you by the Poker Players Alliance, the nonprofit group that we are members of and you should be a member of as well, fighting for the rights of poker players all around the country, trying to get another delay in the UIGEA, which is now scheduled to go into effect just 4 weeks from now on June 1st. Let's talk a little bit about the impact that is going to have on online poker, and also let's talk about a follow-up to last week's discussion on this show where I brought up Washington Congressman Jim McDermott's bill, which joins with Barney Frank's bill and Bob Menendez's bill in the Senate, which was to try to make online poker completely free of all government restrictions, except for allowing it to be taxed and regulated, which Stars and the other online sites have been pushing for, and the PPA has been lobbying for as well. And one of the questions we came up with for McDermott's bill was, if we're going to get taxed on it, the way McDermott's bill sets it up, 6% of your deposits would go to the state that you live in, and 2% of your deposits would go to the federal government. So there effectively would be an 8% tax on what you deposited online to play. And I was asking you, how would PokerStars handle that? Would they reimburse the players? So instead of buying in for $100, you would only get $92 in your account. Would Stars give you the $8 back? So in effect, they're paying the tax, or is the burden going to be on us? I know you talked to some Stars people over in Monte Carlo. What did they say?
They actually are not for sure how to do it. There's several amendments that may be. There's a rider that's being talked about. There's some wording within the bill itself that there's questions on. They don't know for sure how to handle it at this time, and all options are being considered. So my answer is, nobody knows.
Okay.
That, unfortunately.
What about the UIGEA, which is now scheduled to go into effect after its 6-month delay? June 1st is the date for the Unlawful Internet Gambling Enforcement Act.
There's going to be some major problems if that is not delayed, because frankly, nobody knows for sure, number one, if it's legal or not. It's never been tested in court, and we really don't know for sure what's going to happen. What that basically does, it throws responsibility back into the banking community, but it doesn't tell them specifically what you can and can't do. It doesn't tell them what the penalties are. It doesn't tell them how to enforce it. It doesn't tell them anything.
Mm-hmm.
So there are no regulations written for this yet. It just says, we're going to make this illegal.
Okay, but we need to, reinforce the fact that it's not illegal to play poker online.
Correct.
And
correct.
Under the UIGEA, it won't be illegal to play poker online.
Correct.
That law only affects financial institutions.
Correct.
Who have their own problems these days.
Yeah, but the problem is, if you can't get money in or off the sites,
mm-hmm.
it's going to be a major, major problem
mm-hmm.
on it. And we're already having problems getting money in and off the sites because of the question marks, and the banks are erring on the side of caution. They don't want to be the test case for any of this stuff.
Right.
Actually, I think some of the people, even privately, some of the people from the PPA have said they would love to get this in court because they think they can prove it to be unconstitutional and all this other. So I don't know for sure what's going to happen here. But if they do not delay that, something's going to have to happen.
Well, we're certainly going to have to follow that story for the remainder of the month of May and support the people at the Poker Players Alliance. You can do that for just $20. You can become a member. That doesn't seem like a lot of money. That's, one bet in a lot of games. You can go to thePPA.org, thePPA.org, and become a member like us of the Poker Players Alliance, fighting for the rights of poker players online, offline, home games, charity games, everywhere else. The Poker Players Alliance, we're proud to have them as a sponsor of the Final Table. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about before we talk about anything else, congratulations to our friend Jeff Roper, who a couple of weeks ago won the main event of the World Series of Poker Circuit event here at Harrah's St. Louis. Last week, he goes off to a bachelor party in Las Vegas. There's a circuit event going on there at Caesar's Palace. Jeff buys into that. 150 people in that event. Jeff finishes 14th. How about that for back-to-back deep runs? That's very nice. Congratulations to him. Just before we went on the air today, our friend Maury Escondani at Poker Productions, which does high-stakes poker, and the National Heads Up Championship on NBC, which you appeared on. And by the way, you were on for exactly one hand this weekend against Chris Ferguson. Our St. Louis listeners didn't see it because it was preempted by a Cardinal game here. But you can go on Hulu and watch those later on Hulu.com. all they showed was your last hand against Jesus.
And I was really disappointed in that because Chris and I had a heck of a good match, went back and forth a little bit, played some really nice hands, none of which got shown.
Well, Maury, who does those shows and Poker After Dark and others, tweeted today about a new show. Here's what he said in his tweet. Rehearsal today for new event, Doubles Poker Championship. 32-player round robin, 50K buy-in, some old faces, bunch of new ones too, lot of interesting pairings in the round robin portion, done randomly. Eric Seidel and Johnny Chan comes to mind as one. Do you know anything about this Doubles Poker Championship?
No, don't know anything about it at all.
It's probably something like what they showed during the World Series of Poker Europe coverage, where they had in the Caesars Cup competition two people playing a hand at a time. So one player would look at the hand pre-flop,
right,
decide whether they were going to play it and what the bet would be, and then when they went to the flop, shove the cards over to the other person on their team, and they would play that street, and then it would go back to the first person for the turn and then back for the river.
And I just imagine some of the possible pairings and the way that, because the styles are so different.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine Doyle being paired with Durr? Think on this for a minute. Durr raises preflop with a 2-5. Doyle sits down, looks at it, and has to keep a straight face. You know, okay.
Yeah, now I don't know that that's what the format of this is
going to
be. It could be one person plays one hand, another person plays another hand. It could be 2-on-2 at the table.
Yep.
I don't know. But anyway, that's something new from Maury. And speaking of TV poker, especially high-stakes poker, we got to talk about one hand from Sunday night on high-stakes poker, where the blinds are 4 and 800, as always, and Doyle straddles to 1,600. David Benjamin smooth calls with queens. Phil Galfond calls with the ace of spades, ten of spades. Daniel calls with the 8-5 offsuit. Ellie calls in the small blind with 7-4 offsuit. And Dwan calls in the big blind with the 9-6 of clubs. So now Doyle checks his option with the queen-ten offsuit. And by the way, I think a lot of regular players, not high-stakes players, but regular poker players who are sitting in 1-2 games or 2-5 games or whatever, are watching this, and they're getting the idea that these are hands to play.
Ooh.
Don't you think that that's affecting a lot of players?
It absolutely could, because this is not a normal cash game.
Well, look, Daniel Negreanu played 8-5 offsuit, and Ellie Alezra played 7-4 offsuit. I got to get in there with that. So, you know, I hope as a cash game player that that is happening. That'll be good. Anyway, so now the pot's $11,000, and the flop comes out ace, jack, eight, all clubs. It's checked around to Tom Dwan, who has the 9-6 of clubs, so he flopped a flush. He bets out 7,400 into a pot of about 11, so about 70% of the pot. David Benjamin calls. He's got a pair of queens, one of which is the queen of clubs, which he slow played pre-flop, and now he's probably not thrilled about it.
No.
But he's going to call because he's got the queen of clubs. They're going heads up. The turn is the six of hearts. Dwan bets out again, 21,200. Benjamin calls. The river is the 10 of hearts. So nothing has changed. Dwan still has the flush. He bets 54-6 into a pot of about 68K, and Benjamin mucks his hand instantly.
Yeah, he's too good of a player. There's no way he's calling that river.
Right. He knows his queens aren't good.
Right.
Here's what I want to talk about for a minute, and maybe we'll get our guest Shannon Shore in on this when we come back, about the notion of not slow playing a hand when you flop it, which I see all the time in cash games and also in tournament games. People so want to trap other players that they'll flop a flush, and even if they're not first to act, if it's checked to them, maybe two or three people ahead of them, they'll check as well, hoping that somebody behind them will act, and then they'll either smooth call, trying to trap on one more street, or they'll check raise there. Not enough people bet out when they have a hand, but if you watch the pros, and Tom Dwan is one of the best, the way he plays this, especially with his range of cards, it's proper to bet out there, because people are going to say, well, he can't have the flush, he bet. Right?
Well, again, it's table image. And he plays his table image so well. People don't give him credit for the hands many times. They think that he will be calling with a 9-6 offsuit or something here, or no clubs, and he still would bet out because he'd be representing it.
Or on a flop of ace-jack-8, Tom Dwan has an 8.
There you go. Exactly. You know, and that is exactly what he could be doing. So he plays on that image, and that allows him to get paid off on some monster hands.
Yeah.
You've seen on high stakes how many different times has he raked in a huge pot?
Mm-hmm.
When he had the nuts, basically, against Daniel, he was trying to run the bluff. Tons of different times. The other thing about this, and the reason why I like it, he had a 9 high in his hand.
Mm-hmm.
He did not have the nut club draw at all.
Mm-hmm.
Another club comes, he knows he's in trouble.
Right.
Because anybody that stays with this bet has probably got a club.
Yeah.
Or a set at minimum, maybe a set.
Right.
But, you know.
I mean, when Benjamin calls behind him,
mm-hmm.
if I'm Tom Dwan, I'm thinking David has the king of clubs in his hand or the queen of clubs or, as you said, flopped a set.
Right.
Maybe two pair, but unlikely.
Yeah, I would say maybe two pair.
Yeah.
Maybe top two possible.
And if that's the case, if you got somebody who's drawing against you or you know you've got him crushed right now because you flopped the flush, get money in the pot.
Well, you want to entice and get money in the pot, yeah, so that if I do a lot of different times. Number one, if I flop a set, if I flop third set, I almost guarantee I'm going to be betting out with it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to be slow playing it.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a dangerous board, like three clubs and I flop top set, I'm going to get some money out there because I want to eliminate most of the people, including even the club draws if I can,
mm-hmm.
get this thing done. Right there when he did the flush, it's not the nut flush. A lot of hands that can still beat him, but he needs to get rid of. There's five people in this.
Yep.
He doesn't want five people checking on this because then no matter what turns up on the turn, he could be in trouble.
Yep.
So get some money out there, get it going, get it eliminated to heads up, which he did. I thought he played it very well.
I think that's a great basic strategy concept that
yep.
a lot of people miss out on because they're so, I want to get the guy. I want to trap this guy.
Yeah.
You know, Phil Hellmuth doesn't bet that right there because he's always trying to, I'm always trying to trap him. He
yep.
always even says yep. that in the hand. You never know him. I might be trapping you. Well, we do know. You're always trapping,
yeah,
Phil.
But there can be danger hands. I don't care if you flop the flush, or sorry, if you flop a straight,
mm-hmm.
but there's three clubs out there. If you flop a set, but it's a 7, 8, 9, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many hands then that can draw to that.
Yep.
Good grief.
Absolutely.
Get some money out there. Get a heads up at least.
We'll talk about this sort of strategy and more with our guest Shannon Shore when he joins us in just a moment. This portion of the show is brought to you by PokerStars.net, where Shannon and Dennis and lots of others are playing in the Spring Championship of Online Poker, a.k.a. The Scoop, right now.
Absolutely. Started 2 days ago. I was traveling, obviously, on Sunday and couldn't play. I did play last night. I entered in two events into it. I cashed in both of them. Did very well. Could have done better, obviously. But I think the total, you can get into this on PokerStars.net for free. The total prize pool, the guarantees add up to $47 million
wow.
in this thing. Unbelievable on that.
And later this week, you're going out to Vegas for another big PokerStars thing.
Again, PokerStars is all over the place. The big game, they're calling it. This will be the first taping of it. And it will be a total of six people sitting down in a high-stakes game. It will be a minimum of $100,000 buy-in. There will be five pros or selected celebrities or people that want to play. And in mine, there's a businessman from, I believe, California that's going to be sitting in with us.
Who are the other PokerStars pros who are going to be at your table? Do you
know yet? Don't know for sure all who's going to be there, but I know Barry and I will be at the same table.
Barry Greenstein.
Barry Greenstein will be
okay.
on that.
And an online qualifier will always be the sixth person.
Correct. And what it is you qualify again for free on PokerStars. You get to the top 200 of the tournament, and then from that you can submit videos, and they select, and it's another process going it. But if you're selected for it, you sit down at the table with the other five people. PokerStars walks up behind you and says, here's 100,000. Have fun, and
mm-hmm.
plop it down in front of you.
Yep.
You get to play for that. And any profit you make, you keep.
Yep.
So you are free rolling. Not going to cost you anything to sit there, and you have a chance to make whatever.
But you can't just sit there and muck your cards and walk away with $92,000 because
no.
it's only what you make over $100,000 that you take home.
Correct.
So you're going to be taping. I know that they have a couple of days set aside later this week. You're taping yours on Friday.
Correct.
And then when will those air? Do you know?
I think it starts June 24th. That's the first time mm-hmm. that it airs. But this is going to be 5 days a week. Yeah. So we're going to shoot several of them between now and June 24th. We're going to get some of them in the can. I don't know how many hands it's going to be. There's even competition among the qualifiers for that as to which one goes the deepest, lasts the most hands, gets the most money, that type of stuff.
Will 1 day of taping turn into 1 week of shows?
In theory, that's what it will be. Whether that actually works out or not, we're not for sure. We're going to be shooting for about 9 hours of actual playing time.
Wow. All
so
right.
It's going to be a full day.
You'll tell us more about that next week on the show because
yep.
by then you'll be back and we'll talk about it. That's the big game. Qualify for it by going right now to PokerStars.net, one of the sponsors of The Final Table. I'm Paul Harris with Team PokerStars Pro Dennis Phillips. Back in a moment on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, the only show in St. Louis with a poker millionaire. That's Dennis Phillips and his co-host Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Bad beat was hit here in Harrah's Poker Room on Saturday night to the tune of $154,703 in a 1-2 no-limit game. The five of hearts came on the river, making quads for one player and a gut shot straight flush for the other player. Nice thing is, they have the backup jackpot. Some casinos don't kick it in until the next day. Harrah's had it up within 20 minutes, an 80K jackpot that is now up to, I turn around here and look, $83,000 for the bad beat here. They've got all sorts of cool stuff here at Harrah's St. Louis, including two former members of The Doors, Ray Manzarek and Robbie Krieger, who are going to be performing at the Voodoo Lounge with vocalist Brett Scallions of Fuel Thursday, May 27th. Tickets are available now through Ticketmaster or here at Harrah's at the gift shop. If you're 21 or older, you can come and see these guys doing some Doors classics and others. And I also want to remind you about the Snow Crab Leg Buffet they do here Thursday and Friday nights for only $24.99 all through the month of May. And Saturday you can get all the Dungeness crab legs and T-bone steaks you want also for $24.99. That plus the $500,000 giveaway they're calling in the Hit It Big game. Just more reasons to come to Harrah's St. Louis. And if you want to qualify for the main event of the World Series of Poker, they'll have another qualifier for that this Saturday, May 8th. Two chances to play at noon and 3 p.m. This is how Dennis got in there.
There you go.
A couple of years ago. All happening. For more details, go to harrahsstlouis.com. Time now for our featured guest today, Shannon Shore, 24-year-old guy who is about to graduate from college. Why is he graduating at 24? Because he took some time off to go become a poker millionaire. $3.2 million on the live tournament circuit, 51 tournament cashes, including 13 at the World Series of Poker, where he made three final tables, four cashes on the WPT, where he's made one final table and one more on the EPT. He's about to graduate from the University of Alabama with a degree in business management. Shannon, welcome to the final table here on 590 of the Fan KFNS.
Thanks for having me, guys.
We're happy to have you on here. So how much time did you actually take off from college to go and be a poker pro?
I took about 2.5 years off.
And how did that go down with mom and dad? I'm always curious about this.
I get that a lot, actually. They happen to be very supportive. I was lucky to, you know, not have to battle that too. You know, it's hard enough to play poker professionally, but if you got your parents, you know, on your back about it, a lot of kids do have to deal with that, but now I've got a great family. They've always been supportive in everything I've done. So
well, that's nice that they were so supportive, but what was it where you said to them, I'm going off to play this event? Was it the Aussie Millions?
Yeah, it was. I'd won that package online on Party Poker. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was just, if I was going to go, it would have been impossible to catch up on. At the time, I was an engineering major. It would have been impossible to catch up on all the schoolwork that I would have missed for, like, the 2 weeks I would have been there. So I just told them, and They were supportive, luckily.
We've got a lot of young wannabe pros who are listening saying, man, I want to do exactly what this guy did. I want to get out of college, and I want to go, and I want to play in some big tournament somewhere and hit a big score and come back home a poker millionaire.
Yeah, but take it to the other step. He came back, and then he went back to college, and he's finishing up his degree, and he's getting into business management, I believe it was.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is impressive, too. You've won over $3 million. You could have kept on the circuit. You probably will go back to the circuit, unfortunately for me and other people on the circuit. But, you know, going back to college, finishing that up, very, very well done. I got congratulations on that.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. I was looking at some of the information here. It says that if you could change one thing about the poker world, and this is one of my pet peeves, too. It says you wish people would quit talking strategy and educating others at the table. Yeah, when the guy, who wants to educate the guy that shoves with pocket deuces against you, even if he does catch it against you every now and then?
Do you run into that a lot, Shannon?
Yeah, I do, mostly the younger generation, actually. You wouldn't think, because those are some of the most educated players around these days, you know, mm-hmm. based on, like, the amount of, you know, reading and stuff that they do. I think it's a lot about ego for them. They have to show, you know, try to show people up. When, you know, if you're looking at it from a pure number standpoint, you know, it's obviously foolish to educate anybody about making bad decisions. You
Speaking of strategy, we were talking before we had you on, we were talking about a hand that we saw on High Stakes Poker on Sunday night where Tom Dwan flopped a flush and bet it out and bet it out and bet it out. And we were talking about how so many players feel like they shouldn't do that when they flop a strong hand. Or one of my pet peeves is people who flop a big draw. They bet the draw, then they hit their draw on the turn, and now they check. Do you find people who are using that kind of trapping strategy more and more?
Yeah, the thing about it's important, you know, you want to like balance your rent. You want to be able to be capable of, you know, people knowing you can bet, you know, bet draws or bet, you know, flop flushes and stuff like that. And you want to be capable of, or you want them to think that you could like be totally bluffing there. So basically, yeah, you see a lot of people, you know, that fall into the habit of, you know, doing one or the other, or like only always checking their flop flushes and stuff. You don't want to do that. You want to basically balance your range of hands.
Actually, I think it's very wise. What it is you always try to put your opponent on a range of hands. And again, if he's somebody that is capable of either checking and trapping or betting it out, and you flop top set, you know, you play it two or three different ways, that type of a thing, makes it much more difficult to play against those people.
Is it different, Shannon, if you're out of position against a player who raised pre-flop and you maybe were the third or fourth caller in and you're going to check it to him in early position knowing that he always continuation bets? Does that change that strategy of betting out when you flop a big hand?
Definitely. I think it, you know, if you're playing against a really aggressive player, you know, if he's going to do the betting for you, you can, you know, take the kind of old school line of, you know, check call the flop with like flop nuts or something, and maybe check raise the turn, or, you know, go ahead and check raise the flop if you think you're going to give him, you know, go ahead and like give him the bait to you know, like three bet you on the flop or something like that. So yeah, if there's somebody that, you know, if you're playing against a really passive player that's only going to, you know, bet when he has a huge hand, you know, you might not want to, like, speed it up like that. But, you know, against somebody that they're going to do the betting for you, I think that's okay.
And again, very good points. You play at the table and you know, play against them, not only with the cards but also with the way they play. The other day I flopped top set with 10s, and I pre-flopped, made the raise. So I made it what it looked to be a continuation raise on it. Guy smooth called behind me, a very aggressive player. Rag came on the turn, and I checked it. Mm-hmm. And he thought he had me crushed. He was positive I had ace-king on this thing. Of course, he bet out, which I thanked him for later. So, you know, again, playing your other players is so nice.
Absolutely. So, Shannon, are you done with college? I know graduation's later this week. Have you taken your last final yet?
Yes, I have. I finished yesterday. It's a pretty amazing feeling.
And you're still awake? Usually when I finish.
Yeah, I've actually been.
I know why he's awake, because he's been playing online. He was in the F-Top series and doing well there, and now probably playing a lot of scoop events, right?
Yeah, I'm playing as we speak, actually. yeah, there's a lot of value in these tournaments. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't slept much lately, but I'm definitely playing a lot.
Are you a multi-tabler?
Yes, I am.
How many tables at a time do you play?
On like a Sunday, I'll generally have like 10. You know, an average of around, you know, 8 to 10 going, but, you know, as many as, you know, 14 if I haven't busted some.
How are you playing? I'm curious about this, and I've asked other pros the same thing. How are you really playing that many tables? Because when I hear particularly, oh, younger players have played 100,000 hands in a year, I think to myself, no, they probably have folded 100,000 hands in a year. They haven't actually played 100,000 hands. How do you handle that many things? I mean, with the screens constantly beeping up, what are you doing?
Yeah, you're definitely playing, you know, tighter. And a lot of times, you know, if you got 14 going, you might be in the early stages of them, and like 8 of them, you know, you're not playing many hands. So yeah, there's a lot of folding. And you get to the point, you know, I used to think that too. You know, right when I was getting in, I'd hear guys playing this 7 or 8 tables at a time. Like, how are they doing that? But you know, your mind just gets to like where you play it, you know, pretty robotically and stuff.
Are there times when you're in an event and you've gone really, really deep, maybe you're getting close to a final table on something, where you'll concentrate just on that one, and on the other ones, on the other screens, you'll just click sit out next hand for 10 minutes or so?
pretty much. I don't physically sit out, but yeah, there are times, you know, if you're deep in something, you definitely can try to focus the most on that, and, you know, probably play much tighter at the other tables.
If you're playing 8 or 10 hand games there, do you play a variety of games, or do you stick them all on a no-limit hold'em?
Well, I try to play, just know when to hold them. If I'm playing a bunch at the same time, a lot of guys can do it. They can play TLO and, you know, even the mixed games and stuff at the same time. But that's the stuff, you know, that's way above my head. But yeah, I try to play know when to hold them unless there's like a, you know, an event with a ton of value of another game. I might play it at the same time.
Who gave you advice when you first started out, Shannon?
You know, I've never really had like a mentor. I never really read much. Most of my experience was playing, just playing. But that's different than a lot of guys I know who, you know, either had coaching or like read a lot. But I was lucky enough to like get my experience through playing, and I learned the hard way. I lost a lot of money when I first got into it, though.
We all did.
It's not necessarily a bad thing, actually. It's a good learning lesson.
That's your tuition.
You go.
You know what? You had to pay tuition to learn a lot in all those years in college. You had to pay some tuition to learn a lot in all those years playing poker, too.
Are you going to be out at the WSOP for most of the events this year or main event?
I'll be out there for the duration.
The duration of it. Any particular, I'm kind of curious, are you going to be playing a Raz or a Deuce to Seven or the PLO? Or what's your range of games out there this year?
Kind of last year I really started to play the mixed games, and I played a ton of different events. I don't play like the huge, you know, like the 10Ks of the mixed events and stuff like that. But I'm willing to play, you know, pretty much. If I bust out of No One Hold'em, there's a mixed game going off at 5 p.m. Then I'll play it.
Mm-hmm. Will you play cash games too, or are you just a tournament guy?
No, not during the series. It's just not any time. So I'll just play the tournaments pretty much nonstop.
And I want to go back to the question I asked before about who gave you advice, because I know you didn't have a mentor, but, you know, Dennis and I'll sit around with a couple of friends and we'll talk about the hands that we played and, you know, would you have played this differently or what kind of strategy would you have used in this situation? Who do you have like that?
I've got a tight-knit group of friends now. There's about six or seven of us, like Eric Baldwin, baseball dude, just won Player of the Year.
Oh, yeah.
And Jonathan Little, who was the main one I spoke with when I like first got into it. And Adam Geyer is a good online player, and Cody Slaybaugh, and a couple other guys. But yeah, we've got a pretty tight knit group. Who, you know, we don't really talk strategy outside of that group, but we're willing to discuss it amongst ourselves.
It's always good to have somebody who can do that, because in every poker situation, there's no specific yes or no. They're always, well, here, I would have done this, or why did you do that? And sometimes just talking about it, sometimes just asking each other questions can make you think about the game in a different way, right?
Definitely. You know, it's you got to be open-minded. You can't get to the point where you think, you know, you're always making, you know, the right decision. I know there was a time when I just thought, you know, I was arrogant, where I thought I was always, you know, I wouldn't even consult anybody. But, you know, you have to be open-minded enough to know that, you know, you're never going to master this game. That's what's so beautiful about it. There isn't, like, a certain way to play it. So, like you said, just speaking with people, it's fun to, you know, gain different, you know, insights and stuff about how to play different hands.
Different than I would have? And I want to know why, what he saw at the table that I missed, or mm-hmm. what strategy he has that maybe I haven't realized yet.
Yeah.
Very, very good point there about learning, continually learning on this. I think my game's better than it was last year now, and hopefully it'll keep improving. If it doesn't, you and some of the other guys are just going to start kicking my butt. So,
Shannon, when you came back to campus after winning all the millions in the live events, did people on campus know you were a poker millionaire?
There's a certain group, like, you know, any guys that play poker around here pretty much know who I am. I don't exactly, like, you know, play the games around here, but, you know, a certain percentage of people do. It mostly happens out at like the bars and stuff. Somebody will come up to me at the bar and say, like, introduce themselves, which is pretty fun. I love when that happens. Yeah, I'm not like a celebrity by any means, but there are some people here that know who I am.
Yeah, I'm not sure that you want to play that up on a college campus unless it's to meet women.
yeah, maybe I should have done more of that.
Yeah, don't play it up too much, or every time they order pizza, they'll look to you.
You're speaking from experience now, aren't you?
Yeah, well, no.
Well, Shannon, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. We look forward to seeing you in person out at the series this summer, and good luck with the rest of the scoop.
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate it.
You take care now.
Shannon Shore, about to be a graduate from the University of Alabama, with a degree in business management.
Yes.
And a nice seven-figure bank account as well. We appreciate him being a guest on the show today. Next week, we'll have a report from Dennis on the big game, the PokerStars high-stakes game that they're going to be recording out in Vegas later this week. And speaking of high-stakes, this Sunday night is the final high-stakes poker show of the season. We've got to see if Doyle can pull out of his tailspin and win. He's won 16 times in a row on that one. That's in danger now. All of that coming up next week. In the meantime, for our podcast, go to the website, thechipleader.com. While you're there, click on the shop button and pick up some of our Final Table merchandise. For more information on this casino, go to the website, harrisstlouis.com. I'm Paul Harris with Team PokerStars Pro Dennis Phillips. Thanks for listening to the Final Table on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.